your host, Jeff Ragavan, and welcome to the Alchemy Podcast, where we're on a quest to explore the intersection of cannabis, compliance, and creative in the marketing world today and beyond.
Welcome back to this week's episode of Alchemy. Today I'm joined by Ryan Holtz, partner at Green Spoon Martyr. Ryan, fantastic to have you on the show.
Thanks, Jeff. It's really good to be here. Really looking forward to this.
Great to have you and great to get your perspective on the legal markets. For everybody who's tuning in right now, Green Spoon Martyr is a national full-service law firm. They have over 200 attorneys across the country. They've got somewhere near 30 or 40 attorneys that are pretty much focused on the cannabis sector. So lots of exciting stuff going on there. And, you know, I think from just a perspective where, Ryan, you're in Illinois, but you guys are all over the place, so doing really great work. And I thought maybe, a great way to, you know, kick off the show, you know, obviously, when you think about, law firms, you know, traditionally, you have somewhat of a conservative, viewpoint on cannabis. And obviously, this is a huge space that's blowing up. So, you know, I'm curious how you actually got into, you know, practicing cannabis law in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is. I was at a conservative law firm when I started to practice cannabis, another national firm. And I sort of really fell into it. I was a consumer finance litigator for much of my career, made partner doing that. And a few of us were looking for new areas of the law to practice, and particularly something that would be helpful to people. Litigation is often a zero-sum game, and I was looking for something that could, you know, expand the pie rather than divide it up, so to speak. And so, but I really fell into cannabis specifically. My partner, Irina Deshefsky, came to me one day and said, look, I was talking to an old friend of mine, a former boss, who's in the cannabis space. He's got a multi-state operation, and he was talking to me about how much trouble he has getting lawyers. Or that he has lawyers in all different states doing all different types of things, very specialized. And he struggles because he would like someone to quarterback that. And she simply said to me, do you think our firm would support that? And I said, well, let's find out. And so we did. And that was the first client we brought on. Irina and I went down to Florida, and I remember going to the first conference I went to was hosted by Green Spoon Martyr. And I didn't know the firm at that point, but that's how we started. And we quickly, you know, at that point, Illinois was thinking about going live on a recreational program. And when they did, that kind of jump-started our practice, and we took it from there.
Awesome. So, you know, I think from a, just from a legal perspective, obviously, you know, you're advising a lot of clients on, you know, fairly complex legal and business issues around recreational and medical cannabis. When you kind of look at what you're doing today, you know, are there any, I'd say, you know, maybe high level issues or anything that things that keep coming up that a lot of clients really need advice on? Like, are there certain areas where it's like, whoa, we're dealing with this issue yet again?
I'd say a huge issue for cannabis companies, big, small, in between, has been the financing. The traditional sources of capital that you get in any normal industry are not readily available for cannabis companies because of federal illegality. And so onboarding investors, finding sources of capital, finding sources of reasonably priced capital particularly have been very difficult. So we are constantly working with clients to source that capital, bring on investors, document those transactions in a way that you might not in a normal industry where you can go to your Bank of America or Citibank and get a small business loan or a line of credit. And so that is a huge issue that we're facing. Another outstanding issues relate to, the different types of cannabis products that have started to be on the market. Hopefully we'll talk about it a little later, but Delta 8 is an issue popping up. CBD, how to deal with the various state regulations about those. And so, you know, it's a wide variety of stuff, but I'd say the corporate work that is necessary to get these companies, up and running with enough capital to, commence and continue operations is a huge issue for everybody.
Without a question. So, from a Green Spoon Martyr perspective, you guys have, over 30 fairly dedicated, cannabis folks, that are really helping across the whole country. When this practice started, how many folks did you have actually practicing cannabis law? When you guys first launched the practice group?
Yeah, so I came over to Green Spoon Martyr in July with three of my other partners at the previous firm I worked with. We moved our practice over to Green Spoon in July. But Green Spoon's been in the space probably longer than most any large firm. As I mentioned, the first cannabis conference I had gone to was sponsored by Green Spoon Martyr. I saw Jerry Green Spoon speak. Never had heard of him before that in Florida, but they have really been trailblazers, so to speak, in cannabis, being willing to work with cannabis, especially out in Colorado in the early years, especially out in the West Coast in California. And so this practice has evolved from that. I see it in the practice group. There is a focus on cannabis at the firm. There is a The firm supports, enjoys being a part of the cannabis industry in a lot of different respects. It's been eye-opening for me. Obviously, Green Spoon did not have a Chicago or Midwest presence when we came over. And so we're really bringing that, especially with Illinois being sort of an epicenter of cannabis in a lot of different ways. Michigan has been a very exciting market. Just that Midwest presence that we bring, and we're looking to expand. Our New York and East Coast practice in the cannabis spheres has really been developing. We're really looking forward to New York going live, and the application processes out there in New Jersey, perhaps Connecticut. So it's really a national practice, but it started with Jerry Greenspoon and his kind of vision to get into the cannabis space when a lot of large firms were kind of staying away from it, and still are, really.
Yeah. Any insight into, at least since you brought up New York, anything, I know right now, all of the local towns and jurisdictions have really until, December 31st to opt in or out of recreational consumption and retail. Any insight as to what's going on in New York? I know a lot of people are kind of eyeing on what's going to happen next. And a lot of people are kind of scratching their heads like, where are we? What's happening right now?
Yeah, and obviously the change in administrations has had an impact. As I understand it, it has been mostly steady despite the changes in administration and what we're going to see. New York is going to be the epicenter of the cannabis world for a little while here. When they issue the applications, and I don't know the exact date, but it will be coming soon, and the regulations associated with that. Everybody is going to want to be in New York, which is not a surprise. And, it's going to take boots on the ground and folks who understand the players. There will be a huge social equity component of that. Exactly how that looks is not entirely clear at this point, but, you've seen movement in that direction with all these states coming online with various social equity programs. And every state is different in how they approach social equity. But in every state, it is at the forefront of, the new industry and the new licensing practices, particularly New York is going to be no exception to that. And so I am expecting a very, very vigorous application process and competition. And I'm looking forward to seeing kind of the rules and regulations and what the New York regulators take and borrow from the various different states, including Illinois. Which I'm obviously intimately familiar with.
Awesome. Now you definitely brought up a little bit of a hot topic a few minutes ago with Delta 8. And,
sure.
I think there's definitely, there's some good discussion there. I think, for everybody who, might have heard of Delta 8 or has seen some of the news in the last few months, Delta 8's really been under substantial scrutiny I know you've actually been pretty involved in the discussion, and maybe give us a little bit of background on, you know, the issue itself and, you know, ultimately what you think will happen from a, you know, a regulatory standpoint.
Yeah, absolutely. The Delta 8 issue has been really popping to the forefront in a lot of different areas, a lot of different jurisdictions, both state and federal. The issue arises from the legalization of hemp, essentially, and primarily through the 2018 Farm Bill and the definitions of hemp that is included in there. And so by legalizing hemp, they defined hemp as basically anything, and this is an oversimplification, but anything with less than 0.3% Delta 9 THC. And the goal of this, I think very clearly, the goal of this was to legalize non-psychoactive compounds associated with the cannabis plant. I think everyone will agree that was the intent, at least the primary intention of the Farm Bill and the hemp regulations that came from that. The problem is that people hadn't thought about or understood Delta 8, which is obviously, as the name suggests, different than Delta 9 THC. And so you can have a product that has less than 0.3% Delta 9 THC, but has significantly more Delta 8 THC. That technically qualifies under the definition of hemp. The issue arises because Delta 8 is potentially intoxicating. It has some psychoactive properties that are, you know, somewhat more muted than Delta 9, but they exist. And so the issue has arisen because this is technically legal, or at least arguably legal. There are some folks, and I digress a little bit, but there is an argument that perhaps Delta 8 is still illegal because it's arguably synthetic. Delta 8 does exist naturally. So there's a federal statute called the Analog Act that basically says synthetics of illegal drugs are also illegal. And so there's an argument that Delta 8 is a synthetic because while it is naturally occurring in the plant, it's mostly created for human consumption through a synthetic process, or at least an arguably synthetic process, and then derived from CBD. And so that there's an argument at the federal level, but putting that aside, you know, Delta 8 is arguably hemp if created correctly with the low levels of Delta 9. And so people have used that loophole to begin selling Delta 8 products under the as hemp. And at the state level and at the federal level, we're seeing some pushback from that. One, there's a lot of pushback from the traditional Delta 9 cannabis industry, who believe, and I think rightly so, that their market is being infringed on or being eaten into by this Delta 8 market that is less regulated, less subject to taxes, and thus, you know, less costs associated with that. And then there's also concerns about health and safety and warnings. You know, I believe it was the FDA, I'm not positive, but it recently came out with a bulletin suggesting that, you know, Delta 8 is not safe, that there have been adverse events reported, and that it is a concern. And I know from in Illinois that state regulators have seized upon that to say, hey, look, this is not something we're going to support in Illinois. Again, despite the fact that Illinois' regulations define hemp the exact same way. And so right now you have this very big gray area where people are selling hemp or Delta 8 products on the open market without the kind of regulation that you see for traditional Delta 9 products. And some people are very unhappy about it. You suggested what's going to happen in the future. I think this is going to flesh itself out at the legislative level in the states. You're seeing it a little bit already. I know, for instance, that Florida has really kind of given the green light to Delta 8 products. They have a very friendly administration, the agriculture side and the hemp side to this product. Other jurisdictions have explicitly banned Delta 8 products. I know in Illinois, again, which I'm familiar with, and that there is various proposals in the General Assembly for how to treat this. And those proposals range from, instituting greater testing, but allowing kind of an open market, a wider market to develop on Delta 8, selling Delta 8 problems, to restricting Delta 8 completely and making it very similar to how Delta 9 is treated in terms of licensure and whatnot. So that's a long-winded answer, but the gist of it is Delta 8 remains in a gray area. People are making money selling it in a wide variety of jurisdictions, but I believe it is going to, the loopholes are going to close, and there's going to be a more comprehensive way states are dealing with this, I'd say in the next 6, 12, 18 months.
Got it. Yeah. I mean, definitely an interesting issue that most people probably didn't think about until people started paying attention, right?
Right. And yeah, exactly. I mean, it is some, it is, I can safely say it was an unintended consequence of the Farm Bill. But to my opinion, to the extent it matters, is that it is legal at present, as defined. And to make it illegal, you've got to take some legislative action. Not all regulators agree with that, but that's been kind of my take on it.
Got it. Well, let's jump back a little bit to legislation. So obviously, as new markets open up and more states are starting to legalize, from a firm perspective with you guys, like, how are you guys keeping up with the development of federal, state, and local cannabis law in order that you can best serve a growing customer base?
Absolutely. And that is one of the great things about our practice, and one of the biggest challenges is that you are looking at a 50-state system overlaid by a federal system, oftentimes in competition. Okay. And then when you get down to the 50 states, you mentioned in New York, you're talking about opt-outs, you're talking about opt-ins at the very local level, zoning issues, et cetera. So you have a wide pattern of disparate regulations and rules. And so we, one of the things we use, of course, is, the formerly known as Canareg, made by you guys over at CeeLo. You have to be, in a lot of respects, you have to have boots on the ground in some of these jurisdictions. It really is imperative. And it's knowing the local zoning ordinance. It's knowing, who to speak to about getting zoning approval. It's knowing who's opted in, who's opted out. It's, huge issues, the setbacks. Every state or a lot of states have various setbacks. Sometimes it's, 1,500 feet from another cannabis operation. Sometimes it's 1,000 feet from a school or church or sometimes a daycare. And when you get into certain urban environments, talking city of Chicago, city of New York, for instance, those setbacks can be very, very restrictive. And so knowing the local terrain is huge. And then again, now you're talking Detroit and Chicago are completely different regulatory environments. New York, Chicago, completely different regulatory environments. And so you need to know all that stuff on the ground. And we rely on, local zoning ordinances, local changes in government. All those kind of things, as you can hear, I'm home, so I have some dogs.
Yes. <I
know. laughs> So.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. I know we're kind of getting, close to the end of the show here, but, when you kind of think about, federal legalization, I think this is a question that comes up literally every day. I'd say not just in, the community, but also like friends of mine. They're like, Jeff, when do you think, federal legalization is going to happen? And there is no easy answer for this, but I think just from a legal perspective, I'm curious to hear your viewpoint. Is it something that you think is going to happen in a year, 2 years, 3 years, never? What is your kind of prediction there?
To me, it's certainly not never. It will happen. I don't think it is imminent. I think the political cap, my thought is that it's going to take a different administration and frankly, a Republican administration to sort of bridge the gaps and make it kind of a compromise proposal. People have talked a long time about immigration sometimes needing a Republican administration to kind of get a compromise to the finish line. And I see that with cannabis, because even though there's widespread support in the Democratic Party, I don't think you're going to see a Democratic Party get the necessary, a Democratic administration get the necessary federal legalization support from the Republican Party that you might if you could get a if you had a Republican president. That's getting a little too far into politics, but in the current environment, the big impediment is that I think a lot of people think that there's kind of one chance to get some cannabis legislation on. Mm-hmm. And so you see that playing out a little bit with the Safe Banking Act, in that you have a House of Representatives that has passed the Safe Banking Act overwhelmingly multiple times. You have a Democratic administration that would sign it in the presidency, and you have a Democratic-controlled Senate where there is support for safe banking and Republican support, frankly. But what you also have is you have senators, particularly senators like Cory Booker, who sense that there will be one chance to pass some kind of cannabis reform here in the very near future. And they want something broader. They want something broader that deals with the social equity components, criminal justice components of it. And so from Cory Booker's perspective, and I certainly don't need to speak for a senator, but yeah. As I see his perspective is, I don't want to give up my vote on safe banking, which even though I support, because as soon as I do, I'll lose any leverage for the kind of greater reforms that I think are warranted. And so what you have is kind of a stalemate despite this support. And I think something's going to have to change to break that, whether it, you know, maybe after the 2022 elections, perhaps there's a change in the way folks are looking at that. But again, I think that dynamic persists here for a little while longer, and that you see kind of maybe regulatory changes around the edges, but that you do not see the kind of reform that I think some people were hoping for after the 2020 election. That's my take on it. I've been wrong plenty of times before, but I just don't see it.
Good insight. Ryan, I don't know if you've, you know, listened to the show before. I'm sure you have, but we always, you know, we talk a little bit about work in the beginning, and then at the end of the episode, we like to get to know our guests a little better. So
okay.
I'm going to do some quick fire questions for you. And lately I've been kind of mixing it up and doing this kind of fun this or that. So I'm going to give you, you know, two things, this or that, and you tell me what you prefer, just to get to know you a little better. Are you ready?
All right.
Okay, first question. Are you a saver or are you a spender?
I am a saver.
Okay. Honesty or the other person's feelings?
The other person's feelings. Is that the wrong answer? Probably.
Well, there's no
wrong answer. No wrong answers.
There's no wrong answers here. Coffee or tea?
Neither. Pepsi.
Oh, wow. Look at that. Sponsor.
Pepsi. Or my colleagues make fun of me because they'll see me on most Zooms with a Pepsi in my hand. I've got a couple of them sitting right by me right now.
That's pretty funny. TV or a book?
Used to be a book, now it's TV.
Oceans or mountains?
Oceans, for sure.
This is a good question for you, being that you reside in Chicago, so it'll be an interesting answer because I think you have the best of both, but or maybe not. Winter or summer?
Summer. Summer for sure. I do like when it gets cold. But you know, not too cold.
Well, I think, you know, for a lot of my friends in Chicago, I'm like, are you guys just a glutton for punishment?
One of my partners is from Minnesota, so
yeah,
he's got it quite a bit worse. So,
Super sandwich.
Sandwich for sure.
Okay, last question. Camping or binge watching shows at home?
When you said camping, I was going to say that there were very few things that would that I would like less than camping. So binge watching shows is for sure. I am not a camper, and my wife makes fun of me for all the things that I'm not good at around the house and outside and things of that nature.
Awesome. Well, Ryan, listen, I appreciate you coming on the show and sharing your knowledge and wisdom of the space. And, you know, we'll be paying attention to what happens, you know, over the next year or so on the federal level and see if you're right. See if your crystal ball comes true.
Right. I reserve the right to change my opinion. Ryan, thank you, Jeff. I really appreciate it.
Ryan Holtz, partner at Greenspoon Martyr, thanks again for coming on the show.
Absolutely. Thank you.
This episode of the Alchemy Podcast was brought to you by Philo. Thanks for tuning in. And if you enjoyed today's show, don't forget to subscribe and share.